The year is 1639. Jeremiah Horrocks, a 21-year-old minister who studied astronomy in his spare time, using Kepler's laws, calculated that Venus would pass between the Sun and the Earth within his lifetime. On November 24th, to be exact, on the Julian calendar, which was used in England at the time. To be safe, Horrocks arranged his Galilean telescope to project the image of the Sun onto a screen a day early.
Anxiously intent, therefore, on the undertaking, through the greater part of the 23rd and the whole of the 24th, I omitted no available opportunity of observing her ingress. I watched carefully on the 24th, from sunrise to 9 o'clock, and from a little before 10 until noon, and at 1 in the afternoon, being called away in the intervals of my business of the highest importance, which, for these ornamental pursuits, I could not with propriety neglect. But during all this time I saw nothing in the sun except a small and common spot, consisting, as it were, of 3 points at a distance from the center toward the left, which I noticed on the preceding and following days. This evidently had nothing to do with Venus.
But he did not see Venus that day. When he returned, a short while later, there it was, a perfect circle, cast in front of the disk of the sun.
About 3:15 in the afternoon, when I was again at liberty to continue my labors, the clouds, as if by divine interposition, were entirely dispersed, and I was once more invited to the grateful task of repeating my observations. I then beheld a most agreeable spectacle, the object of my sanguine wishes, a spot of unusual magnitude, and of a perfectly circular shape, which had already fully entered upon the sun's disk on the left, so that the limbs of the sun and Venus precisely coincided, forming an angle of contact. Not doubting that this was really the shadow of the planet, I immediately applied myself sedulously to observe it.
Never before seen, he drew his observations. The Earth turned, and the Sun and Venus set for another 121 years. Only Jeremiah Horrocks in Hull, England, and his friend William Crabtree in Manchester, England, were the first two to ever see the transit of Venus. On June 5th, this year in Winnipeg, we should be able to see the transit. The upcoming transit will be the second of two. The previous one was on June 8th, 2004. So what is the transit of Venus? I spoke to Dr. J.N. English, Associate Professor of Physics and Astronomy at the University of Manitoba.
So the transit of Venus is just a crossing of Venus in front of the disk of the Sun. So it's like a mini eclipse, except Venus is so small that it's only blocking 0.1% of the light of the Sun. Unlike when the Moon passes in front, the Moon is a much smaller object, of course, than Venus, but the Moon is much closer to us, so its angular size is much larger and works out to be about the same angular size as the Sun. And so that's why we get these beautiful eclipses from the Moon. Now, Venus being much further away, its angular size is very small. So we watch it pass in front of the Sun as a dot, and that's called a transit.
The event is so rare that it happens only twice in every 105 or 121 years. So after that first time it was seen, astronomers anticipated the next. Astronomers needed to observe the transit to find out the scale of the solar system.
I guess one thing we should point out is that the transit of Venus is a really rare event because the orbits of Earth and Venus are slightly tilted relative to each other. So Venus doesn't often pass in front of the disk of the Sun. So it was very exciting to get everyone involved to observe the transits of Venus so we could figure out the absolute scale of the solar system. These events happen with approximately a century between each of them, and they happen in pairs, the transits of Venus, 8 years apart. And Johannes Kepler had done all these measurements of the orbits of the planets, so we knew from his laws that the period of an orbit, how long it takes to go around the Sun, the square of that is equal to the cube of the distance to the sun. So we had relative distances.
Right.
So all simple. You have to do is measure how long it takes for an object to go around the sun, and you know, relative to the Earth-Sun distance, how far away it is from the sun. But what we didn't know was what is, in kilometers, say, the Earth-Sun distance. So that's what they needed to figure out. And Kepler predicted the transits of Venus, but died before observing them. And then Edmund Halley proposed, that's the guy who Halley's Comet is named after, proposed that you could measure this Earth-Sun distance called the astronomical unit via parallax using the transit of Venus. So that's what they set out to do. So parallax, I guess I should explain, right?
Yes, please.
So if you are looking through one eye and you have your thumb on your arm, extended arm out in front, and you look at something in the background and you close one eye, you see my thumb in one place, or your thumb in one place, and then you close the other eye, you see your thumb projected on the background in a different place. And that's parallax. And you can imagine that you can use that using geometry. You now have distances, and you can measure an angular distance, and that can give you how far away something is. So this is how you triangulate. Now the distance between my two eyes, that's called a baseline. If you want to see a bigger angle, instead of just opening and closing eyes, you'd look through one eye and then you'd move from one side to the other side. You see a bigger shift of the object that you're looking at when projected on the background. So what you want when you're doing this kind of parallax measurement using Venus, you want to get a large baseline.
So astronomers set out all over the world to broaden their baseline, and they mostly got it right the second time around. But now they had a new problem.
There were no transits in the 20th century, and the ones that we were talking about in the 1700s, 1800s, those ones encountered a problem. When you're measuring the length of the path across the face of the sun, the best way to do that is to time the entrance of the planet in front of the sun and the exit of the planet from the face of the sun. And what they discovered looking through their telescopes is that when it gets close to the limb of the sun, a dark blotch happens called the black drop. They named it the black drop. So they couldn't see the circle of Venus right against the outer circle or edge of the disk of the sun, because there was this black mark that would occur. And so they couldn't get their timing to the second. They could only get their timing to part of a minute, but not the second.
So what caused the black drop?
Two things. One, the quality of the telescope you're using, and that is made worse by the atmosphere on Earth, but that's not it, because it happens in space. So it's the quality of the telescope and the fact that the edge of the ball of gas that we call our sun is darker than the interior parts. So there's actually a diminishing of light coming from the edge of the sun as well. So it's a combination of two factors.
The measurements paved the way for what we know today. We now know the distance between the Earth and the sun. So what could we still learn from observing the transit?
Okay, so today it's still big science in that you're using big instruments to do it. There'll be ground-based observations and there will be space-based observations. So what we have is around Venus, we should note right now that the European Space Agency has had for many years now a mission called Venus Express. There'll be ground-based observations in Hawaii with large telescopes, and there'll be lots of amateur observations as well. There are amateur groups across the world that will be making observations. What one wants to do now is look and see whether they can use some of these techniques or improved techniques that are used to look at exoplanets. Those are planets orbiting other stars instead of in our solar system. So what happens for the exoplanets, most of them we discover by their host stars wobble in terms of velocity. So the motion of that star is how we discover the planet going around it. So for example, there's a force of gravity between the two of us. It's actually pulling on the two of us. And if I orbit around you, cause you to wobble. So we can use spectrographs and figure that out and discover planets. And some of them are discovered by the transit method. But what happens often is once we discover them, we go and we use the transit method on them. So again, what happens is the exoplanet passes in front of its host star and it diminishes the light by fraction of a percent. Using this, we've been simultaneously using spectra to figure out what the chemical composition is of that system of that's combined of the exoplanet and the host star. You'd like to be able to figure out what the chemical composition is of just the planet, because then you would know if it could perhaps harbor life, you know, so if it's at all like our own. So what they're going to do is look at the moon, and the moon is reflecting the sunlight. It's going to be quite analogous to the dimness of looking at another star with a planet going around it. So when Venus transits in front of our sun, it will be similar to the situation of looking at a host star with an exoplanet transiting across it. And so what they want to do is to be able to see what differences they see in the sunlight as it's reflected from the moon to us as Venus transits across it. And the thing is we know a lot about Venus. And simultaneously, while the Hubble is doing this, Venus Express will be looking at the transit as well and at Venus, which means that Venus Express will be getting, well, what it knows about Venus's atmosphere at the same time as it will be bouncing to us from the moon. So those two sets of observations can be compared. You know, they'll be able to see how good their method is, what they can determine from transits of exoplanets.
Well, that's all well and good for the astronomers, but what about us? There are a number of ways you can observe the transit of Venus. You could find some number 14 welder's glass, or you can find other filters online. Just be certain that they can be used to view the sun. Now, you can't just look at the sun. Another cheap and easy way is to make a pinhole projector. To make a pinhole projector, you need some scissors, two pieces of cardboard, some tin foil, a white piece of paper, tape, and a toothpick or pin. Cut a square in one of the pieces of cardboard, about 4 square centimeters. Tape tin foil over the square hole you just made. Next, take the toothpick or pin and puncture a hole in the center of the foil. Next, tape the paper to the other board, so this board will be where the image will be projected. Hold the pinhole board between the sun and the now white cardboard as far away from the whiteboard as you can, at least 2 meters. A ray of light will shine onto the whiteboard and allow you to see the transit, or the sun. You can also use this technique for a solar eclipse. You cannot miss this last chance to see the transit of Venus. See the transit through some telescopes or a pair of eclipse glasses on June 5th from 3:30 to 8 at the University of Manitoba's University College. For details, visit www.physics.umanitoba.ca. Thanks to Craig Becker for acting as Jeremiah Horrocks, exploratorium.edu for the pinhole projector instruction, and Dr. Jayanne English